Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, you know, there's no shortage of conversation around dinner tables across the country these days about the benefits of transitioning from a traditional corporate job to your own business. There's lots of books, really good ones, actually, that are out there, and we've had some of those authors and some of those experts on our show in the past. And today I'm excited to say that we've got someone who covers this topic, I think, from a bit of a different perspective, and I think it's much needed in the small business world today. Our guest is Rhonda Cook. She is the Chief Strategist and Workshop Facilitator for Kiron Bay Associates, LLC. Rhonda is divinely gifted when it comes to workshop training and creating a business strategy. As an entrepreneur herself for more than 9 years, she has a passion to inspire and support fellow small business owners in building legacy organizations. Welcome to Indie Business Podcast, Rhonda.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here today.
Rhonda, let's get started by asking you to share with our listeners a little bit about your personal transition experience from corporate America to your own business.
Absolutely. Actually, my own transition was a little bit rocky. I wasn't really prepared, which is why I actually wrote the book Transitioning from Corporate America to Entrepreneurship, because I wasn't initially prepared, and I didn't know that I wasn't prepared. My first journey out of the corporate world into my own full-time was when I did a lingerie business. I actually had a patented product, and I went out and I manufactured all this stuff. It took me 2 years to get to the point where I was able to go to market, but there were so many things that I did wrong because I didn't understand that I was small and that I was just starting, and I spent a lot of money. I had the money to spend, unfortunately, but it caused me to do a lot of things that not so well, in other words, and so I made a lot of mistakes. So my own transition was, again, fairly rocky, but I also have to say that I had divine help, and I had some natural ability that sort of helped me as well, but it did not prevent me from still making some very large financial mistakes. And one of the things about entrepreneurship is that when you're learning and you're making those mistakes, I can put a price to the mistakes that I learned. There's a $5,000 photography mistake when I did a photo shoot with a model that was modeling the materials. There's a manufacturing mistake. I remember that China trip, the one to. So there, those things stand out, and those are the things that sort of calibrate and mature an entrepreneur. But a lot of times what happens in those mistakes is that you get slowed down. So my own transition, although my personality allowed me to do a lot of things that many entrepreneurs can't do so well, it still does not eliminate the mistakes. What I hope to do in the things that I do now is to help eliminate the time factors and the money wasters, where entrepreneurs can move ahead a lot faster. So again, my own transition, I worked for the major corporations most of my life. That's all I knew. I only knew how they did business, and they did business big. And I thought that's what I had to do, and that wasn't the case. I could have done things a lot smaller and tested a lot of things with that lingerie company that would have made a lot more sense economically than some of the things that I actually did do. So quite a lot of learning for me, which is why now I try to reach back and help entrepreneurs to sort of eliminate some of the time that they spend learning things and also eliminate wasting a lot of money.
And Rhonda, you talk specifically about some of the financial mistakes, and I think those are probably the ones that might be the most obvious for most people, and it doesn't take long, actually, to make some of those. But there are some other mistakes that we make that are a little bit more subtle. They're not quite as pronounced, at least initially, as obvious as some of the financial mistakes that we can make. And your book are sort of some of those nuances, I think, in a really neat way. And one of the things you talk about is sort of the hidden costs of entrepreneurship that are not financial. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Well, giving up the security and the mindset of having a stable if you will, life. Entrepreneurship, you don't really know what's coming at you. You're having to learn all the time. In the corporate world, we learn to do our jobs. So they give us a job description, they give us a desk, they give us a computer, garbage can, all right, get a place to put your picture to the kids, okay, it's done. But in the entrepreneurial world, we don't ever get done learning the job. If the computer breaks, if you don't have the resources, if you don't have a technician in-house, you've got to go find somebody that you can trust with all of your data for your computer, or you do it yourself. That's a relationship that you've got to build. Because
and
when you're...
That you mentioned that, my husband and I work together in our business, and we were talking just the other day about how we used to be able to push like *7 on our office phone back in the traditional job days, and within 5 minutes, a tech would show up, and he would, and I would go to Starbucks or some not to plug Starbucks. I would go across the street to a coffee store, and he would tinker in there for an hour, and then I would come back, and there'd be a note. Everything's fixed. Just do this, just do that, and you know. So my husband and I were last week spending like 3.5 hours trying to fix something. So those are some of the things that people don't think about in advance.
Right, and that's the whole point, is you give up that sort of, we know how life is going to look, push *7, go down the hall, the HR person is there, legal department's on the next floor, accounting is 2 stories up. No. So, again, the subtlety, the sort of what are you giving up, is that sort of comfort bubble. Out here in the entrepreneurial side, what we have to do is go establish those relationships. We have to find people that we like, that like us, that can do the work that we trust, that's going to charge us what we can afford to pay. So you could go through potentially 10 accountants before you find the one you really like. Well, that's a lot of time. If you don't have a reference of somebody who can tell you that and kind of cut that time off of your research, you're going to have to go do that. So back to the cost, when we look at cost, it's either time or money. So in the entrepreneurial world, what it's going to cost us is more time, and our learning curve now changes. We no longer know everything. We think we do in the corporate world because we know our job well. We've been there for 10 years. Who can tell you, I've done this job, this, that, and the other, and I've grown with this, and they've given you classes. Out here, you have to pay for those classes, or you pay for those experiences that give you that equivalent. And so back to the cost. It's going to cost a lot of time developing relationships. And once we foster those relationships as entrepreneurs, we're very guarded about them. I know some of my colleagues won't even give up the names of some of their closest cohorts unless they understand why they're giving them up and what the benefit is to the person. Because once you've got what you really need in the corporate world, you're not interested, or from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you're not interested in actually messing that relationship up because it costs too much to get there. So back to the cost, it costs way more time. You're learning all the time. You're constantly looking in the mirror of life to see, where did I miss it? What do I need to fix now? How do I actually get? So it's way more work than what's ever really shown, I think, when we see the big billion-dollar businesses, the Facebook guys got a movie now, what did it really cost? And you can't really see that. It's hard to show those things, the day-to-day. We get to see the highlights of some of the corporate superstars. We get to see them, you know, flashing that new commercial or hitting the billion-dollar mark. But we don't get to see the day-to-day.
Right. It is useful to be able to see that. Rhonda, I think we may have a caller. I'm not sure I'm going to give a person a chance to ask a question if they have one. Caller, are you there? Rhonda, you were talking about the cost. Let's talk for a second about the family cost, because one of the things your book does touch upon, I think it's such a smart thing to include this, is the quote-unquote cost, not just in terms of money or time from a business perspective, but also from a personal one. Can you share a little bit about what people should expect in that regard?
Yeah, it's often said that you can start your own business and you have more time to spend with your family. Well, that's always an emotional jerker, particularly for women. But I have to say that that is really not the case, especially not in the beginning. You really don't have the time. You have more flexibility, if you will. But you end up working, you know, till late at night or early in the morning, as sometimes I often do. So having, thinking that you're going to be able to have a lot more time with the family isn't really a good expectation unless you really don't need the income.
Well,
unless
I love
you can
you
really,
that, you know, there's more flexibility, but not necessarily more time. I know I like to say that if mommy has a business, then everybody in the household has a business.
Right. That's the other thing is, again, getting everybody in the family on board. And sometimes I've run across clients whose families do not agree about the new business baby concept. And that creates a bit of a ripple in the family, because one of the things that can happen is if a person is extremely passionate about their idea, I'm going to do this, and they don't have the support, somebody along the way will get aggravated and irritated, and there's a price to pay later, even if the business is eventually successful. And you can see that in today with a lot of the stars who have wealthy parents who've done great things. Even Barbara Walters mentioned, I saw her in an interview with Oprah Winfrey once, that said that she and her daughter were distant because she gave so much of her life to television. The child had a beautiful life in terms of resources, but she missed her mom.
Yeah,
so back to sort of having that balance of sort of how do you do it and what's really expected, I think that's a very difficult place. And I don't think it's given the right amount of attention as we talk about entrepreneurship and what it really cost us in the beginning and getting the support from the family. Do you give up your dream or do you scale it back? And what is it going to cost you at the end of the day? It could be significant.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, and let's try to give our listeners some guidance. Let's say somebody out there is thinking about transitioning from corporate America to entrepreneurship, and I know this is a broad question, everybody's different, but what are some of your tips that you can share so that they can address this issue, maybe not solve it because, of course, it's a fluid issue, but address this issue with other adults in the family and other older children in the family before the, you know, the drop-off point or the jump-off point?
Right. Well, I definitely say that having a discussion with, firstly, a sort of an advisory panel before you even kind of get to that family talk, because you can feel bombarded with family if they sort of aren't on board. So really having to have a sort of a board or a few people you can sort of counsel with individually to sort of give your idea, you know, some validity and to sort of get an idea of what it may really cost you with respect to leaving the corporate world permanently. So
let's just assume that you've done your due diligence in that way, and you really know that you would like, you already know based on your due diligence that you would like to start your own business, and you have even you know, participated in teleconference calls or gone to a trade show in your industry. So you've looked things up and you have some insight. Do you have any tips for, you know, approaching family members with this issue?
Absolutely, definitely. Approaching is really to sort of set, one of the things about, you know, being prepared to talk to the family is set that expectation level, is to say, you know, be able to say to the family, one, this is a concept. Here is what I believe it's going to take. And believing what it's going to take and what it's actually going to take is different. You won't really know the real until you're in the strategy. But to be able to sort of give the family some idea of what sacrifices they may be required to make. Because the truth of the matter is that if mommy goes to start a new business, maybe the 15-year-old has to start dinner tomorrow. Or maybe the 16-year-old has to do more outside of the house now. Or maybe there has to be more help with the laundry or the cleaning. There's going to be a sacrifice on the other members of the family. And so one of the things to start talking about or start getting particularly kids ready for is that there's going to be a sacrifice. But also to involve them in the payoff, help them understand what the benefit could potentially be. Not just that this sacrifice is perpetual and there's no end to it, but be able to offer them something with respect to the payback, what it is you're trying to accomplish. So there's buy-in for the whole goal line, and allow them to be able to sort of have that banter back and forth and get used to what that may actually look like. And so particularly for young kids or younger kids that are you know, the the baby, the 6, 7, 8 year olds, that's kind of a little different story. You'll have to have a different type of conversation with them with respect to how much time and attention they get from their parents going into sort of an entrepreneurial standpoint. The older kids, a different conversation because they may be required to help more than what they were before. But again, back to helping them understand, it's the first sales job you'll do is because you have to sell back to the family unit, particularly that in the household, that benefit. What's in it for me? And I hate saying that. I hate that, but it's so
true. Well, no, it's a really good point to make, and I'm so glad you mentioned it. And earlier you talked about, you know, making that transition and having to establish specific relationships to help you grow your business once you have decided to take that plunge. So I want to ask you a question about that. If you are in a traditional job today and you are transitioning, you are moving toward it, you even have like an end date, you know, you've talked with your family, you know when you're going to give your notice. You were talking about developing those relationships. Can you share a little bit from your experience about you know, the timing of that and you know, making sure, for example, if you need to, that your coworkers at your existing job don't find out in advance because the fact is that most people kind of want to leave after there's a cushion. The recommendation is always, you know, save up some money, work some overtime, you know, start your business before you leave your job. But the reality is, and I know this because I did it, it's like, you know, and I did it when there was no massive amount of Facebook and Twitter conversation going on about. Today it's really different. So it's like almost impossible to have a business and a Facebook page at the same time without people finding out about it. So what are your thoughts in that regard? How can we be fair and professional in terms of our current job obligations while at the same time, you know, moving toward a transition?
I do say it. It's a loaded question. One, because in today's environment, there are a couple of things that are happening. A lot of companies are now asking, do you have a separate business? So, and a lot of monitoring is now happening. I'm not quite sure why. I gave a talk last year to a group, and part of the questions that came back to me was sort of some of this information that we're talking about now, but more specifically that a lot of companies are now asking their employers, or employees, do you have a separate business? And for good reason, but back to sort of having integrity with that, I particularly say that if you are starting a business, you can put a website out there. I don't agree with the whole Facebook and Twitter and all of that before you leave the corporate realm, simply because you can be researching. If you want to be private about that, then that is the least place, private place to start talking about it. So I really would not encourage having Twitter and Facebook and all that in terms of, you know, this business concept out there before you leave if you really don't want your organization to know that. I don't think I have an issue with having a website, a web presence. If you don't, you can do that with a little more privacy. If the name of the company doesn't have your name, you don't have to sort of be there. So that's not so up in your face. But with a Facebook page and with the pictures and it's a little less private in my mind. And so I would definitely not advise to do those things until once you've actually left, if privacy is an issue. Don't go that way because you're putting yourself out there. And a lot of times today, companies will do that. They will research their employees on Facebook, on Twitter. They do that. So if you don't want to be noticed, don't go out there. That's what I say.
That's a really good point. And sometimes I would imagine, Rhonda, that means that your transition period may take a little bit longer because certainly social media marketing is a very significant and important way to get the word out about your business.
Absolutely, but you can't, if you're going to be working for a company, actually marketing a serious marketing campaign for your own company, and you know that your organization would frown upon that, you're putting yourself in jeopardy. And I always say that if you need that bread from that company, then don't do anything to jeopardize that job. And
right.
If that means that you can't start that marketing campaign until you're out the door, then do not do it. Because, again, the family's sort of depending on it. You're jeopardizing the future of your company. So many things, and you look like you're betraying. And back to sort of taking relationships out of the corporate world, then you jeopardize even that. Because what you've done is you've sort of bothered that whole structure and that protocol in the corporate world that talks about that loyalty. Corporate America likes for you to be loyal. And if it looks like you've betrayed them or used them, then it's a very sketchy kind of thing, and it's very unlikely that you'll be able to take those relationships away because you look scandalous.
And I'm so glad that we're talking about this, because even if you do keep it private, which I did in large part because of the things that you're talking about, but from a practical perspective, since there was no Twitter or Facebook, I didn't have to worry about somebody finding out about it and then sharing it. But so I had more control. But you know, obviously, once I gave my notice, though, people wanted to know why. And when I told them, it was clear that I hadn't started the business yesterday. So it's a really interesting issue. And of course, we can't answer for everyone. I certainly suggest that people check their employee manual to see what the policies and practices are with respect to this issue, because if they thought about it, it's probably written in there if they do have a policy. So that's a good idea. But one of the things you just mentioned, Rhonda, was things that you should take with you when you transition. And you talked about relationships pretty extensively. What other things should we take with us when we leave a corporate environment and start our own business?
A lot of times people are so fed up with corporate America, they just want to burn that bridge. They want to blow that mothership up and just, it's over, and I want to forget everything. And I say, don't do that. Really think through and really take catch on to the idea of success. A lot of companies are old companies. The Fortune 500 are old companies. The reason they make so much money is because they've learned. They've invested their time into understanding how to make money in the marketplace. So one of the things to take from a corporate entity, especially if you work for one that's a very old company, very well established, is to learn about their successes. Take that with you. A lot of times we don't take the time. We may work for a company for years, but we don't really understand their history. If you take the time to understand what makes a company successful, take that part with you, because that's part of the colloquialism is the game. But that word, the game, it sort of means the same thing as strategy, and I prefer to use strategy, although game is sort of a word that's used more often. But that's the strategy, is to sort of understand success. Take that with you. Look at all the hierarchy that's built inside the organization, or the lack of hierarchy that's not there. If you don't think the company is successful, if you think that the company is not doing so well, they don't treat their employees well, take all that with you and understand how you can become a better employer, how you can create relationships better. Very often we're so full of judgment that we don't really stop to learn from things that we've come out of. So one of the things I say in taking out of the corporate experience is to take all of the experiences, the good, the bad, the relationships, the hierarchy, understand how those people made it work or what they did not work. There's still a benefit to being able to pack up all that stuff and bring it with you, even right down to the bad managers, the people that we consider to be control freaks and subhuman. They teach us something as well, because one of the things that they can teach us more than anything else is how to have compassion for other people, even if we have to make a decision that will affect someone negatively, is at least to be able to relate to what it could feel like on the other side. And still have, again, back to that maturity. Because once you leave the corporate world, you leave the follower concept, and you immediately become an example to the community as a leader because you're a business owner. And so
I'm so glad you mentioned that leadership point. And then another thing that you talk about, in addition to taking things with you just in our last few minutes, is making sure you leave some things behind. And one of those things you describe as corporate thinking. What do you mean by that?
Corporate is the big thinking. It's really that huge. It's the, I'm going to go get the office. It's going to be nice and big, particularly for service-type businesses, attorneys, consultants. It's got to be the same as it was in the corporate world. And that's not always, you're not always able to do that. But that's really, again, back to our key, our learning. That's all we know. We have an office, we have a cube. So we believe sometimes that that's really what we have to do. Even in our own home offices, we may buy elaborate furniture or we may get elaborate phone systems, major things that look like corporate, but yet we're not ready. There's no substance in the business to support that kind of infrastructure. Again, back to sort of what are you taking from the corporate world is that you're looking at the infrastructure that can support all this fluff and beautiful stuff. But remember coming out initially, even if you have a lot of money, it takes a couple of years to really get established, and you'll need every dime for marketing, more than likely. So being able to sort of make some good decisions about scaling down on the furniture or maybe even software or some things you can scale down on to use for marketing, because that's the place where you're going to make more money, sort of pour more money into that marketing piece. So the corporate thinking is the big stuff, that everything looks like the corporate world. You're modeling the corporate world.
Right, and you also talk about leaving behind the, I'm paraphrasing here, the sort of submissive tell me what to do mentality. What do you mean by that?
That one right there is just happens to be my pet peeve, because I am a consultant, and what I get from a lot of clients who haven't quite learned this yet is they want me to make decisions on their color for their logo or their brand. I will not do that because it's not my place to do that. I can advise you on what makes sense, but to say what color should I pick is very what I call corporate thinking, because in the corporate world they don't allow you to make those decisions for the company. You have to ask. But when you're on your own, you have to be the stand-up guy. You're the leader. You're the one who says, I'm going to pick this color, I'm going to pick this brand, I'm going to pick this logo. Now, there is a point of sort of processing that. What should it look like? Why should? But outside of that, giving that authority away for somebody else to make those decisions for your company is wrong. And you never learn to sort of be a savvy business leader if you do that. So I really caution against and advise people who ask me those questions like that to say, that's corporate thinking, to ask every single thing. Definitely good advice to get, professional advice, but that's what it is, advice. Ultimately, you are the person who makes the decision. Advice is this better or that better because I'm thinking of this or this, or this is what I would like to do, how's the best way to do that, not what color should I pick. So there's a way to sort of do that and still maintain that leadership position.
Great. I love those points. Such fine points. You know, sometimes it seems obvious to, you know, people like you and me, we've been in business for a while, but these are great tips to be sharing with people who are just now starting out. Rhonda, tell us where we go online to learn more about you.
You can definitely find me at Kiron Bay, and that's spelled K-H-I-R-O-N, B as in boy, A as in apple, eisandedward.com. So that's www.kironbay.com. And for
Excellent.
The book.
Well, we certainly will be looking for you there. And fantastic tips. Once again, Rhonda Cook, Chief Strategist at Kiron Bay. She has just written this wonderful book. It's really great, Transitioning from Corporate America to Entrepreneurship, A Strategic Plan for Leaving Corporate America. Next week, right here on Indie Business Podcast, we've got Susan B. Butler. She is the CEO and founder of the Susan Buckley Butler Institute for the Development of Women Leaders, and she's also a leader herself. Of course, she started out at Anderson's Consulting, now Accenture's, first professional female employee, and that's an exciting thing. So what we're going to be doing is talking with her. Of course, it's March, so it's Women's History Month, International Women's Celebrations going on all around the world, really. And I'm excited that we'll have her there. Her book is Women Count, A Guide to Changing the World, for those of you who want to check that out in advance. And I'll be looking forward to seeing you right here next week on Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.